These next three chapters, 36, 37, 38. 36 is essentially the closing, the end of Jacob's tale. I'm not saying he was on the evolutionary scale and he had a tail. I spelled it correctly. But things in Jacob wrap up. 36 provides a closure to what was going on in his life. 37 covers the promise implicit in the blessing of Isaac that was a non-blessing to his firstborn, yet secondary son, Esau. And then 38 will just leave us going, huh? And that's where we get to have a cliffhanger, because that's the fun part. All right. Jacob's tale closes down, and we get this mini colophon, an account of Esau. We all know who Esau is at this point, just having read through. Firstborn son of Jacob, secondborn in priority in the eyes of God. And as this... Oh, sorry, that was too slow. I'll try to be quicker next time. But we have this account of Esau that's related for us in 36. Jacob has been set into his context. He is fully invested as a patriarch now. Esau, we now get the completion of his side of the world. This is a demonstration not only of God's faithfulness, but his faithfulness to what he says. Remember with Rebecca's pregnancy, there was this tussle going on in there. And she said, the text tells us, she inquired of the Lord, God, what's going on? His reply was telling, two nations are within you, and the older shall serve the younger. I said a couple other things, but that set the stage. Now we come down to Jacob has been rather finely and intimately detailed in all of his goings on. He fled to the north. He got married. He got a concubine. And then he got really wealthy. Then he came back. And then he had that confrontation with his father-in-law, followed on the heels by that confrontation with his brother. God superintended it all, and while not smooth and clear as glass, it is no longer troubled water between the two. Now Esau gets his mini tale. Notice Jacob took 11 chapters. Esau gets one, and not the entire thing. He and his people move. Jacob makes it clear we're not going to live as close brothers. And he moves across the Jordan, and Esau moves south and west, the east of the Dead Sea. Just like Abram and Lot, they looked and realized already our herdsmen are having a clash because there's no room anymore. Our people and our critters are too numerous. We're bumping into each other every time we turn around. It's like some kitchens I've worked in over the years. So, they moved apart. Then we get these descent lines tracking out of Esau. They intermarried primarily with the Ishmaelites. I realize this is a fade to grave background, but remember with the Isaac settling here with his parents, and Ishmael, the prophecy, yeah, he's going to be a king as well, and 12 kings will come from him in massive lines of descent. They're promised to Hagar, but he's going to live down here. And he did. Well, this area on the map showing as Edom, this became the inheritance, as it were, of Esau. Well, they're right through the heart of Ishmaelite territory. It's kind of natural if they want to keep the bloodlines, at least in the family, a lot of intermarriages with the Ishmaelites. And it turns out that way. You read through the names, you read through the word by word of the text, and you realize, yeah, lots of these marriages are with the Ishmaelites. Sons and daughters, daughters and sons, given in marriage, taken in marriage, traded, blah, blah, blah. All their chattel and possessions, everything southeast of the Dead Sea. That's what that shaded area is up there. I do have a clearer, unfaded one that I'll put up in a little bit. And then once they got down there, they spread to the east and the west. So that was their territory. Notice, this whole area, with the exception of the Arabah Valley, is considered classified semi-arid desert. What was the predictive non-blessing of Isaac over the secondary son Esau? You not shall live of the fatness of the land like he gave to Jacob. You will live from the fatness of the land. All this area up in here, reasonably well watered. Great livestock country, good crop raising country in the valleys where the water collected. Down here, not so much. As predicted, Esau and clans lived from or away from that fatness of the land. And then there's a listing out of principal descendants in, well, essentially 15 through 43, the back end of the chapter. It goes through a lot of names. Not as many as, say, Genesis chapter 5. Perhaps as many as Genesis chapter 10. Let me tell you, they're a lot more difficult to pronounce.
Yeah.
Except for Galen, because, you know, he does that stuff. You handle those languages better than anybody else in the room, so you have a much better idea, but this is why I rarely talk to pronounce those things when you're here. Yes. So we get a line on the chief sons, and the focus is on the 12 of them. How many sons does Jacob have?
12.
12. Yeah. 13.
13?
Including Dinah.
That's not a son.
Is this an Indonesian thing? I don't know. gender choice didn't exist then. Perhaps identity. But as Jacob becomes Israel, Esau morphs into Edom. No longer just a personal tribal ID, but a national named ID. Family into the tribe, then the tribe into the nation. Lots of families and nations and tribes listed. Becomes the nation of Edom. Again, as promised by Isaac's non-blessing. Yeah, you're going to be fruitful, you're going to multiply, but you're going to live far from the best of it. But you're going to be a big group. Kings, tribal chiefs, leaders of city-states, all of them are listed out as descended from Esau. And here's a better look at that map. In full color. Jacob is off the map here at the moment because he's up near Shechem, which is 60 miles north of Jerusalem, which would be, off the map. But this is the area that became known as Edom. And we're told several times he moved to the region of Seir, named after this mountain here on the southeast mountainous terrain in the Dead Sea area. Apparently you can go up there and it's a spectacular view.
One of the things I find interesting and kind of in unexplained is, okay, for 20 years, Jacob has been off someplace else, and Esau has been living on the old homestead, Abraham and Isaac's area. Jacob comes back, and Esau has to move. It seems strange.
It's a head-scratcher, isn't it? Yeah. He lived there relatively peaceably. Text doesn't say why. Prophecy did. There was an internal compulsion that he was going to live on this side, away from this area here, which was the traditional region of Abraham and Isaac. And that's their claimed area. But it is kind of a things that make you go, moment. He had all that before him. Why didn't he put his foot down? His name was God. God the sovereign.
I heard a question. Israel was only the size of New Jersey, according to all the news.
Roughly.
Yeah. And now, on top of that, there was 12 sons there for Abraham and Isaac, or whatever. The 12 wives, and the Ishmaelites had 12 wives. You're supposed to have all the people in the world to keep, you know, whatever. Yeah, you see Israel, and not everybody, not all Jews live in Israel. But you see all the nations surrounding it, plus it seems like the Ishmaelites outnumber the Israelites for a whole bunch.
They do. They have. They will.
Okay.
And then you read, was it Zechariah 14? And all the nations gather at the doorstep of the children of God. Necessary. Not for God, but for the arrayed powers of the earth to hit them all at once. If they had to go search them out, it'd be a long war. But then when God says, go, and they gather at the doorstep of Israel, the war goes for a while, and then some guy comes down, white clothes, white horse, sword in his mouth, the whole thing, and he says, done, wham, it's over. Yeah, there's a reason they outnumbered it. God has always held, it's not a term that's even introduced yet in Scripture. After the confrontation of Elijah and the prophets of Baal, indirectly confrontation with Ahaz's wife, Jezebel, Ahab's wife, excuse me, not the white whale, but Jezebel. Then God introduces this term scripturally, I shall always have a remnant. And then it grew in significance as a theological term. There will always be a remnant that does not bow the knee to anyone but the Most High God. He actually put a specific number on it in 1 Kings 19 for Elijah. There are yet 7,000 who have not bowed the knee to the Baals. 7,000 in a 2 to 3 million nation? Oh, huge! Yeah, let's take them on. Nah. But we're dealing with a sovereign God. And that's what's here. Like Dayton said, why didn't Esau just settle? He couldn't. He couldn't. He was to live at enmity with his brothers. Enmity means there's constant friction. You reduce that by moving away. What a coinkydinks, huh? Not so much. Let's move off. Esau, the final, and I use the term chapter loosely, from 37 through 50, the last true chapter of Genesis, if you're going by literary declension, the rest is the story of Joseph. What becomes, what is so special about Joseph? Because when he's introduced, this is a shift in focus. It's been sweeping. Abraham, single family, enlarged family, Isaac, smaller family, a transplant, a return, bigger family, it shifts off just the family into the one who would become the protector of that family. We don't know that yet, textually. We've had Bibles for a long time, so we know that. There's a short colophon offered on behalf of or for, we don't know if Jacob caused it to be written or if it was just plugged in after the fact. Just to rip the colophon, these are the generations of so-and-so. And it's a summary statement of everything that went before. It's not, this is what's coming, like we would do a Western lit. It's, this is what just happened. Well, that's what just happened. Jacob. Now that Jacob is done happening, focus comes to Joseph. Who was Joseph? Where is he in the birth order?
11.
It's like Reuben. I can't even see you down there. In the inheritance line special, according to the laws of the day. But where did he come from?
The favorite wife.
The favorite wife. Oh my. Firstborn son of the best wife. How did Jacob grow up? Any favoritism in his house at all?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kind of. If you look in the dictionary under favoritism with children, there's the picture of Isaac's family. So he's out at 17 years old. The text actually tells us he's 17 years old, which is not even close to an adult. Still a punk kid, particularly in the eyes of his brothers. Some of whom Leah's first four sons, her natural sons would have probably been 18 to 25 years older than Joseph. Yeah, they're out there.
I'm not sure about that. I thought he worked for 20 years and
he did.
First seven he was not married. And the second
17.
So somewhere in about the time he left was
And I understand what you're saying, and there are those who will say at best they were, Reuben was 10 years older than Joseph, on the outside. There's an argument for it, yes, both ways. It just, there's a gap big enough that, well, I've, a very good friend of mine, he's my age, he's 64. His older brother would have been 66, but cancer took him a year and a half ago or so. And then their little brother, 12 years, and they always called him the, oops, this stuff still works, child. Because 12 years went by. That could have been a lot how they viewed Joseph. Could have been a lot how he was viewed, as in, are you kidding me? But Leah and her clan looked with disdain on the beloved wife because she was barren for so long. So he's out there with the sons of Leah's maid, Bilhah. We are not told exactly what occurs, but we are told the effect. Joseph tattles. Huh? Yeah, little brother's tattling again.
Job requirement
on the youngest brother. Absolutely. You have a duty to get your older siblings in trouble whenever you can. And my brother's 4 years older. Trust me. I poster child right there. But he wins no points with not only those brothers, but the rest of them. Lynn.
I would say that if I was son number 11, and I felt the way I did, I would tattle also because, well, I'm looked down on. I'm not important. They don't see me as anything. Hey, I got these dreams. I'm going to give them those dreams, and they're going to know I'm someone.
Know I'm someone. Pay attention to me. You're right. I'm number 11. I'm down here in the weeds. Nobody looks in the weeds except for a snake. Ooh. I did not just call Joseph a snake. Joseph, however, is the favorite, and we're told that right in the text. And then we're given a description of what was going on. And of course, given Jacob's family, are we surprised at all? Nah. He watched his dad do it to Esau, but he experienced his mom doing it with him. Guess which one he chose? I'll do this for my beloved wife's son. He's the special one. There's two factors there. Firstborn of Rachel, the best wife, and he was a child of his old age. Arguments run from 50 to 65, but he was beginning to age, and then he gets this new son. Makes me wonder how he treated Benjamin when he came along.
No.
There was a lot of ambivalence because Benjamin, though another son from Rachel, killed her. Strike one. So, Jacob then bestows this significant robe or cloak. Traditional interpretation is of many colors. Fooling around with it, and in the text, that's there. But there's also some kind of exultation attached to this. The fact that it is multi-hued and not just quickly spun on a loom out of the mohair or the wool that was at hand, this made him different. Yeah, I'm only the 11th kid. I'm down here. My dad gave me a coat, and now I stand out. He gave me this cloak, and it's special because I'm special. Careful with that one. Run.
Well, since he got all the striped, spotted, mottled sheep, what do you expect?
Yeah, that's a good point. I had never put that together. Yeah, but for his other boys, we're not told that it was a multi-hued anything. They just wore beauty tees.
I think it's interesting. Okay, here we have Joseph. He's the favorite. So he's favored by Jacob. But now he comes and he lets people know he's favored by God.
And this is a real sticking point, isn't it?
Yes.
Because in the very next piece of the text, there's an obvious special status on Joseph. His brothers hate him for that. And we're told they hate him for that. That's not a marginal note. That's not an extrapolation from the text. They hated him for that. They couldn't even talk to him peacefully. Probably just a daily greeting was a sneer. Maybe an elbow. Maybe a foot hooked out trying to trip him so they could laugh. Anything to bring this kid down a peg. Then God comes in. Uh-oh. Remember how God came in with Laban? Laban's pursuing Jacob hot. He's going to get it all back. And God says, walk carefully. Laban did. He did not get his way. Even went so far as to create a treaty that says, if either one of us crosses the stone for harm, may God wipe us out of the spot. Harm intended for the other, that is. In his late teens, Jacob begins to dream. Joseph.
Yes.
Jacob had a dream.
Yes.
He had more than one dream. Thank you. All these J's are throwing me off. I mean, I'll be lucky if I don't have my own name in there. You see what this is? That's a traditional method of using a handful of sheaves of shorn grain, twisting, and then making a quick knot, tie them off into a sheaf. And then they would lean several sheaves together, and then they would stand. And then after the whole field, this is back-making, breaking way. No modern combines. You hold your arm here, you go down low, you catch it, and you swing as sharp a side as you get, and it all falls into your arm. And when it gets to about here, you grab that handful, twist it off, loop it around, tie it, and stand it on the bundle you've got building. When the whole field is done, everybody goes back through, picks up these bundles and throws them into a cart or packs them onto a donkey, and they take them into the barn. And then when they've been in the barn for long enough, then they take them out to the threshing floor and beat on them. They use what's called flail. I didn't prep any of that, so there's no picture. I apologize. Maybe someday it'll happen when we get to Judges chapter 6. Anyway, dream number one. Hanging out in the field, harvesting the grain with his brothers. Doing this. That's what they're doing it right now. And they're each working a row or rows, stacking them up, and then they'll come back and gather them all in, and they go into the feed tray, the seed bin, or whatever it is they're using it for. Hey, you know what? Right during this grain harvest, good grief, I had a dream. My sheaf stood up, proud and tall. And you can just see his brothers going, oh boy. Here it comes. Question. What's he going to pull out of his hat this time? All your sheaves came over and started bowing down to mine. This is not winning points, kid. This is not winning points. Really? Really? They don't hate him anymore. They despise him. They turned it up a notch. They poured on the heat in their hatred of this brother. You have got to be kidding me. Putting on airs, walking around in your fancy coat after we're done harvesting, walking out to the field with it on, and then draping it onto a branch so it doesn't touch the ground. Then he has another dream. This one is a little more universal, if you'll allow me to use the term. Dream two, it gets a lot worse. The sun, the moon, and coincidentally, 11 stars are bowing down to Joseph. Yeah. Wasn't that a fun family meeting? Probably right after the grain harvest, they're all sitting in there before they have to get to the next big task, having a meal, and Joseph pipes up from the foot of the table, hey, guess what?
Oh, no.
Not again.
Well,
do you think Joseph was telling them about these dreams because he think that they would find something about him that they would like?
I don't see that. That's kind of hard to imagine, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm just curious.
Why on earth would you open your mouth?
He's a teenage boy.
He's he's a teenage boy. He's also, like Leonard was saying, he's been at the bottom of the heap. He's been the overlooked kid. Long time. 17, 18 years. Yeah.
I had a dream.
Oh, golly. That just dropped that. What's that Disney film? Rapunzel. The little tavern scene where they have a dream. She gets all the tough guys singing. Anyway. sorry. Divergent grain. They're sitting there, and he says, yeah, sun, moon, 11 stars started bowing down to me. This was a little too much for Jacob.
Why 11? Why 11 stars?
How many brothers does he have at this point?
The what?
How many brothers does Joseph have at this point?
Oh.
Because Benjamin has been born. He's the youngest of the lot. So that's all the 11 brothers, sun and moon, clearly mom and dad, in their little universe, that's everybody important. But he sashays out at dinner, hey y'all, I'm going to rule over all y'all. Well, in the Appalachians, if you don't say all y'all, it's just one person.
All y'all.
All y'all, yeah. If you say hi y'all, you're talking to one. If you say hi all y'all, it's plural. It's everybody. Yeah, it's country speak at its best. Jacob. from up at the head of the table. Really? Really? You're going to rule all of us? The text is very clear. The brothers, it's jealousy. Jacob. Huh. I've seen this before. We're told that Jacob. Sorry, I went too far. Jacob. Text tells us, kept his mind on this, or kept this in mind, or put it in reserve. Very similar to the Greek wording after Mary was told, and she pondered these things in her heart, meaning it never left her. She was always aware of what had been said about this life that would develop in her. Similar thing, Jacob, You really gonna, you think you're gonna rule us all, huh? But then mentally he sat back and thought, I wonder, I wonder. And he held these statements inside of, huh, I had a dream. Angels going up and down a staircase. And God appeared at the top. And he told me some amazing things. 14 to 15 years later, oh, I had another dream. Jacob, it's time for you to go home. So this didn't fall on a scoffer's heart in Jacob. His brothers, oh, he's toast. He's done. We write him off. He's an idiot. With delusions of grandeur, of course. Jacob held this, and I wondered if this was in his mind those few years ahead when he's on his way south and then reunited with the third most powerful man in Egypt who just happens to be his son. Came true. 100% came true.
You said third most powerful?
The Pharaoh was the first most powerful. The level right between the Pharaoh and Joseph was the high priest. Okay. The priest of Ra. He had more more clout. Thank you. Wonderful word. Over the people. But Joseph held the power of life and death over them. With the exception of Pharaoh, nobody was more politically and socially powerful. But the high priest fit up there.
That's the one I didn't know.
And that's the one, yeah. Yeah, that's where that came from. Sometime later, the oldest take the shot. The oldest take all the critters north. Okay, it's normal. You graze out a certain point, or you graze it to a certain point, then you move them all. Because if you let sheep go, they take it down so tight it doesn't regenerate. Goats leave a little more. Cattle leave a little more. It always recovers. Sheep, right. It's like those cartoons of somebody going over something with a lawnmower.
Flintstones.
What's that?
Flintstones.
Yeah. They.
Just another question. When Joseph tells this story, and Israel responds to it, he says, "Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren come to bow down before thee?" I thought by that time Rebecca had passed away.
He was talking about Leah.
Rachel had died. I mean, Leah is still there. So most of our textual critics will say that was the umbrella of parenthood. Because Leah was still principal wife, now principal wife, because there was no competition. And only the two concubines were left as far as that went. So most of them say this is an inclusive statement that says, you really think the parents are going to bow to you too, Leonard?
It's interesting. Jacob, he admonishes Joseph, but then, I wonder.
Yeah. Corrected him at the table or at the meal or under the awning, wherever they were sitting at the time, where all of them happened to hear that. He corrected him or challenged the statement. Perhaps that's better. He didn't so much correct him, saying that's not going to happen. He said, you really think that is going to be? But you're right in that the text tells us he held it all inside. He took note of it and kept it. So, yeah. And it, like they said, you know, Mom, she was dead. They buried her several months ago before they got this far south. And there's a new in the family, you know. He couldn't really hate his brother because he had a clue. But, yeah. And then we come to this little episode of, a little bit further down, they've grazed him here. Now they move him north, up into the area of Shechem. Enough water, enough pasturage for everything they had. They were known to the Shechemites. Well, they didn't exist. For some strange reason, somebody wiped out most of the Shechemites. But the people around, yeah, they knew who these guys were, and they're not going to hassle them. Jacob, Israel, says to Joseph, go on up there, see how everything's going, and then come back and give me a report of the the state of the nation, so to speak. This is an odd insert. Textually, it doesn't fit. He has received a parental desire expressed. Go up, find your brothers, find the flocks, check everything out, come back and tell me how it's going. Here I am. Huh? Wasn't he just talking to you? But something else is going on in the narrative, and remember, with Hebrew narrative, it is not always Greco-Roman Western linear. It can loop, it can double, it can cross over, it can jump back. This probably is one of those where Jacob had said, or leaned into the tent, you know, he's probably out in the awning, enjoying the cool of the day while he's supervising whatever he's supervising. He goes, hey, Joe, come here. Here I am. But this is the exact phrase used when Eli finally figured out who was calling to Samuel in the night. Here I am. Speak, Lord, for your servant hears. Oh. This is the exact phrase of the call of Isaiah. Who shall I send? And who will go forth for me? Here I am. Or KJV, here am I. Send me. Same exact phrasing. We begin to get a hint that there is a thumbprint of God on this young man's life. And if you were an ancient Hebrew and you were reading this or hearing this for the first time as a possibly a young teen in what passed for the education at the time, this is a formula they know. Ah, this is God directing action. Just a side note, but it doesn't really fit. But it's a very common reply when God summoned. So he heads up to Shechem. And we find him wandering around up there going, where's the sheep? Where's my brothers? He doesn't find them. But the delay was necessary for other pieces to fall into place. It's easy to just read through and go, oh, he goes, he doesn't find him, and then he finds a local. But his brothers and a Midianite caravan and Joseph all had to come into the same place in the same timing. I know I've said it before. When God writes the notes, the symphony is amazing. Here it comes. Except this is more like Gotterdammerung, not Die Valkyrie. Sorry.
Coincidence. It's a coincidence.
Yeah. Coincidence. Yes, just like a coincidence that the modern nation of Israel has been attacked wholeheartedly three times and come through reasonably unscathed. What a coincidence. That's a story for another time. Finally, Jacob finds a local and he says, bunch of guys, whole bunch of sheep and goats. Seen anything like that wander through? Oh yeah. On the Moab Trail. He said, yeah. And I overheard him saying, oh, he said something about Dothan. Okay, this means nothing to us. I mean, honestly, this means nothing to us. But it's an area further north. It was also an area of known pasturage. 10, 15 miles. Believe it or not, that's over 3 days with sheep. You can do that, you can walk that in a day. But if you're letting the sheep move at the pace they can survive, that's about 3 days. Joseph catches up. Okay, the timing, the pieces are beginning to clunk, 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 tumble down into place. Significance? Dothan is a railhead. Huh? Not to break that train of thought, but sorry. It is a caravanserai. It is one of the stops on the caravan route that went through that area of northern Palestine. So, I realize the map is not the greatest, but this here, the caravan came down through, skirted these, this was a main trade route, came through between these rivers across the mountains. This will be the southern Lebanon, where the cedars grow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it came through on the shoulder of a mountain here, came down, came through, skirted the northwestern outskirts of Dothan, and then went down and through the coastal area, another big stop in Giza because it was connected to a port, and then it carried down and around into Egypt. This is a huge route of commerce, and all the pieces have now tumbled into place. But they came up out of Hebron, went towards Shechem, then they moved him up here to Dothan. This is where Joseph catches up. There's the third piece. Clunk, thump, thump. This is a finely orchestrated piece of music.
Do they finally get along?
Oh, here we go, Debbie. Here we go. They see him coming. Yeah, one of them looks out there. Look at that coat. Yeah. Here's Joseph. Never leave home without it. Exactly. This was an early annex card. Special robe made that easy. He was identifiable at the distance the human eye could notice and recognize a human being. Excellent. If we act fast, we can kill him. Oh, exactly.
Teach me.
But you had exactly the right timing on the question. Is this going to be a reconciliation? Are they going to figure it out? Nope. The only thing they're going to figure out is how do we get rid of this kid? How do we get him out of our hair?
He should have thrown that robe away.
That's logical.
That would make way too much sense, but you're right. Lose the robe, he can get close. But he's the special one of his father. His daddy had that made for him. You think he's going to toss that at an idle limb?
No way.
Okay. That's like, you know, right. On your 18th birthday, your dad pulls you aside and says, this is the pocket watch my granddad gave me, your granddad gave me, and I'm now giving it to you. You're not going to walk by the first trash can and toss that just because it's unique, right? So this was a special thing, but it betrayed it. Remove this inconvenient pest from our lives. Here's our chance. Nobody's here. Dad's not here. None of the family retainers are here. They're out with the sheep. They were gathering back in. This is probably toward the end of the day because they're about to have their evening meal. Good. We can get rid of him. Huh. Reuben. Yeah, he's pulled some boneheaded moves, but he's the oldest. He takes the responsibility role and puts it on. How about we don't kill him? Still respected his dad, because he knew what would happen. Why don't we just capture him and throw him in this empty pit over here? Most likely a desert cistern used for catching rainwater. And then it could be raised out with buckets and transported where they needed it for storage. Text tells us, yeah, when he's in there, then I'll go back a little later and I'll release him and say, you know what's good for you, son? Get back home now. Don't wait for the J train. Get there now. So they grab him and they dump him in his empty cistern. Okay. All the pieces are perfect. Automatic question coming. Where did Reuben go? Because during dinner, this caravan arrives. They're probably watering the camels, stretching their legs, doing whatever it is they needed to do so they could keep going, because caravans didn't stop for dark. They kept moving. It's like modern day trains. They don't stop for dark. They keep moving. Judah, hey, you see the 4-watt light bulb come on? Or the olive oil lantern? We can make profit out of this twice. We can make some money and we can get rid of the guy and we don't have to kill him. Two birds, one stone. No one got it. What a brilliant idea. No blood on our heads. Besides, we may hate to admit it, but it is our blood. Okay, we're still talking about a problem here. So that's what they did. We're not told where Reuben was during this. Was he out seeing the last of the sheep? Was he making the final rounds of the retainers on, okay, everything peaceful out here, Leonard?
Just a little bit of speculation. He may have been out guarding the sheep, you know, just you know, oh yeah, we'll send one person out, they'll go out, everyone else is eating, but...
That could have been, it could have been on ship. One of the owners, in addition to the retainers, will be out here watching them. Reuben, the oldest, okay, I got first watch. You guys eat and then figure it out. I'll eat when I get back. Very well could have been used. It sounds like a perfectly natural scenario. Reuben comes out, and on his way back, he stops by the cistern. Oops. Heard the kid go. Yeah, he's gone. Now he panics. What am I supposed to tell Dad? Well, what am I going to do now? Brothers, easy. Watch this. Give me that coat. Go get a baby goat. They kill the goat. They let it bleed out all over the coat, then they rip the coat up. Check it out. He just got killed by a wild beast. Easy solution. All fixed.
Oh. It's a C-L-O-A-K cloak.
Oh, you know what? Clock.
No, that's a C-A. That's cloak.
Yeah,
that's
a clock.
Here? Oh, did I spell a clock someplace else?
Yeah, the line just above it. Tear a rip.
Oh, there it is.
Oh, yes, the clock.
So the timing was a little off. So we tell Dad that Joseph got killed by a wild beast. Ew. But they go back. And that's how they sell it. I'm not going to go into 38. We'll pick up at 38 because our time is out. But that's how they sell it. Yeah. He got killed by a wild beast. Jacob bought it. No irony there at all, right? Let's see. Young goats, fur, skin, etc. of the goat. Massive deception of a parental unit. Ringing any bells? Yeah. That was exactly his motif with his own dad.
Oh, yeah.
That's how he fooled Isaac. Killed a goat. While mom's cooking the goat, they wrap the fur, the mohair skin, lined skin on him, here and here, and yeah.
No DNA.
No DNA in those days. Bingo. Well, my had it. They just didn't know what it was. Yeah, they couldn't test it. So.